Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recording.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Game over! Notre Dame knocks off number one!
Tell them what time it is.
We're going to keep getting back here. I'm sorry if you don't like it, and we're going to put ourselves back in this position again.
Pretty good.
With Sean Styers.
Notre Dame is the national champion!
Fisher's going to keep it himself. Slips past a tackler and dives with one hand to the end zone. Touchdown, Mishawaka.
On Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
The Bears are what we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were. And we let him off the hook.
He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him.
And now your host, Sean Styers.
Hello, hello, hello. How we doing today? Thanksgiving Eve. Hope you're having a good day. I've got plenty of Notre Dame football talk coming up here in a little bit. Travel safely if you're out and about going somewhere, whether you're on your way to catch a flight or maybe just driving someplace, or, you know, even if maybe you're not traveling, you're just sitting at home someplace. But we've got Notre Dame basketball coming up tonight, 11:30. That's right, 11:30 in the makeshift Maui Invitational in Las Vegas. They looked like they had already eaten their Thanksgiving dinner in the first half last night. They were only up by 3 over Chaminade at halftime, and then they explode in the second half, outscoring Chaminade 49-26. They ultimately win 90-64, 6 in double figures. So they're going to play Texas A&M, led by former Marquette and Virginia Tech head coach Buzz Williams, tonight at 11:30 in the fifth place game. St. Mary's, by the way, who beat Notre Dame in the opening round, they beat Oregon last night to advance the championship game against Wisconsin. That game is starting now, the championship game. So you've got the championship game, 5 Eastern time, going on right now. And then you've got the fifth place game at 11:30 tonight, the seventh place game after the championship. You know, you've got the two lowest consolation games going on after the championship game. Weird tournament bracket, because usually you start, you know, like you would start with a seventh place game, then you would have the fifth place, then the third place, and then, of course, the championship game. But, I mean, it's the Maui Invitational in Las Vegas. So, I don't know. I don't know what I expected. Jimmy Irizarry's pretty happy about it, though. He'll be running things until the wee... Yeah, there he is. He'll be running things until the wee hours once again. So,
yay.
That's always exciting. Hey, by the way, we might as well get the plug in right now. We've got, just so all of our two listeners know, we've got the Leprechaun Lunch coming up at noon Friday, and we'll be talking a little Notre Dame football there. But Jim and Vince have got the second hour of Sports Beat tonight. So we're heading into the home stretch of the college football season. Notre Dame closes out the regular season this Saturday night at Stanford. Interesting that Brian Kelly said at his press conference this week it's a rivalry game, because I've never really considered it a rivalry game. I don't know that fans consider it a rivalry game, but, you know, I guess they play every year, of course, with the exception of last year, just like with USC and Navy due to the pandemic. But, you know, before last year, Notre Dame and Stanford did play each other every year from 1997 through 2019. Call it what you will. Wikipedia actually says it's a rivalry. And, I mean, if it's on the internets, it must be true, right? But it's the Fighting Irish and Cardinal Saturday night, series renewed. Our coverage starts with the Game Day Show with Tim Growl and Vince Diderio at 3, followed by Game Day Sports Beat at 5. 7 o'clock, Notre Dame Radio Network's Tailgate Show. 8 o'clock, the game kicks off, Notre Dame and Stanford. Then after the game, Vince is in for me with the post-game show with Evan Sharpley, because I'm going to be doing Notre Dame women's basketball that night over on Live 99.9 FM. I've got Notre Dame women's basketball at 4:30 Friday, and that's against Georgia, and then Notre Dame and Oregon State, 7 o'clock Saturday night. So Vince will be filling in for me on the post-game show. But rivalry or not, Notre Dame goes into Saturday's game ranked 6th. In the college football playoff rankings. And if you would have asked me at the start of the season if they'd be 6th at this point, I would have said you were nuts. If you would have asked me if they'd be 6th after watching the quarterback carousel in the Wisconsin, Cincinnati, Virginia Tech little trio of games that was attributable to poor offensive line play in front of whichever of the three quarterbacks Brian Kelly sent onto the field, I would have told you to go get your head checked. But here we are. College Football Playoff Committee released its latest rankings last night. For the third straight week, the Irish continue to climb. They just won't go away, as Joe Buck would say. They rise, not only because of their six-game winning streak, but also because the teams in front of them continue to lose. Michigan State and Oregon, thanks for playing. Enjoy your consolation prize. Congratulations on that contract extension, Mel Tucker. They are gone. Notre Dame is sixth and knocking on the door. They still need help to inch their way up two more spots to reach a second straight college football playoff semifinal. But here they are, and here's what the top 10 looks like right now. You know what? I'll actually even extend it even farther than that. I'll go top 12 for you today. Bonus spots. Number one, Georgia. The Bulldogs, 11-0. They play Georgia Tech this weekend. Of course, the team Notre Dame just beat 55-0. Number two, Ohio State, fresh off their throttling of Michigan State. They overtake Alabama here. Alabama had been pretty solid at number two, and Ohio State now has climbed, and they're going to play Michigan, of course, Saturday. So Ohio State is number two. They flip-flop with Alabama. The tied at 10-1. They've won five straight since their only loss of the season to Texas A&M, and they will play rival Auburn in the Iron Bowl this weekend. Number four, Cincinnati. The 11-0 Bearcats make history. They become the first ever Group of Five team to be ranked in the top four of any college football playoff rankings in the eight-year history of the format. This is year number eight of the college football playoff format. Cincinnati becomes the first Group of Five team to ever even be ranked in the top four. So congratulations to them for that. UCF couldn't do it. They bought themselves rings, named themselves national champions a few years ago. Cincinnati actually in the top four of the college football playoff rankings. Number five, it's Michigan. Their only loss is to Michigan State. They, of course, host Ohio State Saturday. At six, you've got Notre Dame. At seven, it's Oklahoma State. 10-1 Cowboys. Their only loss is to Iowa State. They will host arch rival Oklahoma Saturday. It's Bedlam. Number eight, Baylor, 9-2, the highest-ranked two-loss team. They lost by 10 to Oklahoma State and by 2 to TCU. They will play Texas Tech this weekend. Number nine, it is Ole Miss, also 9-2. They play their rival in the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State. Number 10, Oklahoma, they're 10-1, possibly significant. We'll get to that in a little bit. At 11-12, Oregon and Michigan State, the two teams that tumbled after their losses over the weekend. So the question now is, what needs to happen for Notre Dame to get into the top four and back into the college football playoff? That's the most important question. And then the question after that for Notre Dame fans, do you want Notre Dame to be in the top four, or would you rather them go to a New Year's Six Bowl, maybe have a better chance to win a game? That's an actual question I continue to hear fans raise. It baffles me. I'll address that in a little bit. But first, here's Brian Kelly when asked this week about his team's case for the college football playoff.
Consistency and growth as a football team. The playing well at the end of the season. The balance of both offense and defense. Shutouts at the end of the season playing well should mean a lot in terms of, the overall record. Winning 11 games, against Power 5 football teams across the board. Look, at the end of the day, we're going to be right there at the end, and you know how this is going to play out. We have to beat Stanford. And regardless of what that looks like, it's not going to be played as, a signature win. We think a lot of Stanford. We know their personnel, but it's not going to be perceived that way. So we're going to have to go beat Stanford, play well, and then rely on what happens in front of us. We lost that control when we lost to Cincinnati. But we've done everything else. And we'll have to do that when we play a really good standard team. We're going to have to beat them.
There you go. So Notre Dame is number sixth. And when Brian Kelly said, he said shutouts at the end of the season. I thought he said shoutouts. I thought he was, you know, going to start giving some shoutouts or something there, but that's not happening. But so what needs to happen now for Notre Dame to move up? Well, first, of course, Notre Dame needs to beat Stanford, and they need to do it in convincing fashion. You kind of heard Brian Kelly reference, you know, Brian Kelly's never been big on the style points. That was a conversation that came up this week. Never been big on the style points, but those extra points are likely to matter since this is Notre Dame's last chance to make a case for college football playoff inclusion. They don't have a conference championship game next week, and all the teams around them in the rankings are going to have one. And, I mean, that's something that's going to come up next. You're already hearing it come up right now. We're already hearing the chatter about, oh, well, Notre Dame, you know, they did this to themselves. If they would have stayed in the ACC, you know, they'd be playing in the conference championship game. And Vince and I talked about this the other night. It wasn't just as simple as, oh, you stay in the ACC. You know, you've got all these games, you know, USC, Navy, Stanford, Cincinnati, you know, all these contracts have been drawn up for years. Even if Notre Dame had said coming out of the pandemic one-off year in the ACC that they were going to, hey, we love this conference thing. We're going to, you know, we're going to be an ACC team forever. Odds are it probably, that wouldn't have started until a few years down the line. But that's another conversation. But the 55-0 win over Georgia Tech last week matters for Notre Dame, especially since Georgia plays that same Georgia Tech team that week. That's a head-to-head comparison that the committee can make. Notre Dame has already beaten that team 55-0. They needed to win convincingly. They did. Stanford also beat Oregon earlier this year, the same Oregon team that was third until they lost to Utah last week. So, you know, Notre Dame needs a good-looking win over a bad Stanford team, for starters. And we're going to talk to Troy Clarity here in just a few minutes about Stanford. So we'll do some of that in a little bit. But so what else needs to happen? Well, Ohio State and Michigan play this Saturday. Ohio State, of course, is second. Michigan is fifth, both ranked ahead of the Irish. Loser that game is going to have two losses and eliminated from the playoff conversation. Next, you've got number 7 Oklahoma State right behind Notre Dame, and number 10 Oklahoma a few spots farther behind. They're playing this weekend. The loser of that game eliminated with a second loss. The winner advances to the Big 12 championship game. Now, this is where, you know, a couple different things can happen here. If Oklahoma State wins this Saturday, they have a good chance to pass Notre Dame in the standings. Oklahoma would not, because, again, they're only ranked 10th right now. But that's also why Notre Dame needs a convincing win over Stanford. So they're not just battling with Michigan in front of them and you know, those teams, it's Cincinnati potentially. They can't afford to look sloppy and have Oklahoma State win convincingly over Oklahoma, because Oklahoma State is just one spot behind the Irish right now. They could pass them. But if Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, they go to the Big 12 championship game. If Baylor beats Texas Tech, that's who Oklahoma State would play in the Big 12 championship if they win this week. And then Notre Dame would need Baylor to win that game next week. If Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State this week, then those two teams would have a rematch in the Big 12 championship game. And in that case, you would want Oklahoma State to win the rematch, because that would guarantee that the Big 12 champion, no matter what, would have two losses. And again, assuming Notre Dame wins, takes care of business, the two lost teams, they all fall behind. So even if Big 12 champ and all that stuff, if they have two losses, you're not going to have to worry about them in terms of college football playoffs. So between Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor already has two losses. They're two spots behind Notre Dame. You want whoever wins the Big 12 to have two losses when it's all said and done. That's kind of the easiest way to look at it, regardless of which of those three ends up winning the Big 12 next week. So For Notre Dame's purposes, you'd want the Big 12 champ to have two losses at the end of the season. Short-term purposes, I would pull for Oklahoma to beat Oklahoma State this weekend, because Oklahoma State right now is the fire closest to the butt. As one of my friends likes to say, that's the fire closest to the butt right now, is Oklahoma State looking good, nipping on Notre Dame's heels. They are seventh. Notre Dame is sixth. So you'd want Oklahoma to beat Oklahoma State and knock Oklahoma State a little bit farther behind, because then even if Oklahoma wins, now they have one loss, but they would presumably maybe move one, you know, into that Oklahoma State spot, one loss behind or one spot behind Notre Dame, whereas Oklahoma State, if they win, there's a very realistic chance they could move ahead of Notre Dame. But after that, you pull for Auburn to beat Alabama this week. You also pull for Georgia to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game, and you'd like it probably to be by at least, you know, 10 to 14 points, somewhere in that range, so that Alabama, you know, again, now Alabama's moved down a spot to third this week, so, you know, I think that the case for a two-loss team like Alabama potentially to be in the playoff diminishes all the time. Then finally, Cincinnati plays East Carolina this week. You obviously pull for an upset this weekend that probably won't happen, but then Cincinnati plays Houston in the AAC championship game next week. You pull for Houston to win that game because the odds of both Cincinnati and Notre Dame making it are slim. In that case, then you've got a one-loss Notre Dame. You've got a one-loss Cincinnati team who played the extra game and the data point and all that stuff. That's up to the committee at that point. But realistically, you'd rather see Cincinnati lose and take your chances that way. So that's what things look like if you want Notre Dame to make the college football playoff. Again, that's if you want them to make the college football playoff. But what's amazing, though, to me is there's still this sentiment going around, and a lot of it really about not wanting Notre Dame to be in the playoff, because there are a lot of people who would rather see the Irish just go to a New Year's Six Bowl and play a team like Michigan or Michigan State, because they think, oh, that gives them a better chance to win. I'm just baffled by the very thought of that idea. You'd rather go to a game that literally means nothing. It, you know, there's cash. Okay, you get money, but you get money if you go to the college football playoff as well. Maybe some bragging rights, you win that game, just because maybe you've got a little bit better chance to win than if you go to a college football playoff semifinal, because it means you're the underdog and there's a greater chance to lose that game if you're in the college football playoff. This is like when a college basketball team is on the bubble at the end of the season, and we've had this conversation with Notre Dame before, would you rather go to the NCAA tournament where maybe you win a game or two and then you're done, or would you rather go to the NIT and win the whole thing? Just ask Mike Bray. He'll tell you right now, NCAA tournament, baby, every single time, even if it means you're one and done. I think every coach in America is going to tell you that same thing. They would all rather be in the games that count than the games that don't count. And that's what you have, the difference between being in the college football playoff and any other bowl game. The four teams who make it to the playoff, those three games count. The two college football playoff semifinals, the championship game, they're the only three games that count. Everything else, JV, NIT, whatever you want to call it. You know, Muffet McGraw took her teams to five straight Final Fours from 2012 through 2015. Her teams lost in the national championship game four of those 5 years. Do you think she said, well, you know, we're not winning these games? Or, you know, those other 15 years when they got to the NCAA tournament but didn't even get to the Final Four, let alone the national championship game? Do you think she said, well, you know, we should just go do something else? This isn't worth it. We keep getting to the NCAA tournament, but we're not winning. You know, we're not winning championships. Let's just go to the NIT. You know, we can win that. Nope, they kept plugging away, and they won another national championship, of course, in 2018. I suppose as a fan, you know, maybe it's just easier, to want the easy thing coming into the season. More than 68% of fans who voted in the Athletics poll said that they would be satisfied winning 10-plus games. Win a non-playoff New Year's Six Bowl is their minimal definition of a successful season. You know, and the team passed that, I think, minimal a while back. A lot of the same people who would rather miss the playoff and go to an exhibition Fiesta Bowl that doesn't count for anything other than TV ratings to have a better chance to win an otherwise meaningless game are the same ones who criticize Brian Kelly for not winning more meaningful games against ranked teams. Well, you've won 41 straight games against unranked teams, but what do you do against the big boys? But you really don't want the big boys. You really just want some tomato can you can go puff your chest and say you beat, and then go home and say you won the last game of the year, whether it means anything or not. Cool. All right. Whatever. But sign me up for the playoff every time. You know, there's a reason that Teddy Roosevelt, the man in the arena quote, you always see a lot of the players, sharing it on social media and all that stuff. I mean, it's a bit overused, but it's relevant right now. Here's part of it. The Teddy Roosevelt man in the arena. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. If he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly. So in his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Give me the college football playoff every time. I don't care how many times they lose. Give me the playoff every time against any other game that means nothing. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser, the king of beers, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Football fans, this bud's for you. Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger's a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Tim Growl State Farm Insurance. You need life insurance today. Tomorrow will be too late. Protect your family by calling Tim, 232-9981. Midland Engineering Company, completing their first century of quality roofing experience. The Mishawaka Education Foundation, granting a better future. Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza for both dine-in and carry-out. Fisher's Barbecue and Catering, open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon, Saturday, 11 a.m. until sold out. South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. Wings Etc. Grill and Pub with 15 Michiana area locations. Stop in today or order online at togo.wingsetc.com. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Mimo's Pizza on Edison and Mishawaka. And Legacy Heating and Air. We will take a timeout. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of Stanford football. And I'll tell my friend Vince D'Addario he can shove it right now because he's trying to give me, a hard time. I just got a text from him. But he can go over there and have those exhibition games, I guess, if he wants. Troy Clarity, talking Stanford football with him, coming up next. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT. Of course, we've got Notre Dame and Stanford kicking off at 8 o'clock this Saturday night right here on WSBT. And joining us right now to talk a little bit of Stanford is Troy Clarity. He's a Pac-12 play-by-play announcer and host of the Tree Cast podcast. How you doing today, Troy?
Sean, it's great to be with you. And as soon as I hang up the phone with you, I got a bird to put in the smoker. So my day is getting better and better as the minutes go along.
Nice. Smoked turkey. That's the way to go. I love the smoked turkey.
Hard to beat. It is. Notre Dame's hard to beat, too, this year, it seems.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Troy. When I was looking up a little information this afternoon on Stanford, I read something interesting. That 2018 game back at Notre Dame Stadium, both teams came into the game unbeaten. They were both top 10 teams. The Cardinal at that point had won at least 8 games for 9 straight years. Of course, Notre Dame ended up winning that night. It was Ian Book's first start. Since then, though, Stanford, again, they were 4-0 going into that game. They are just 16-22 since then, and we know that they're 3-8 right now. What has happened over these last 3 years that has led them to this point where they are right now?
Well, it's a funky confluence of things, right? And I think what Stanford fans are unfortunately realizing again is that there are so many things that have to fall just so in order for your favorite team to win one game, much less win 10 during the course of the season and be in chance, and be having the chance for big things. And a lot of those things that went right for Stanford during very much of the first half of the decade, even going in and stretching up until around the 2017-2018 season, haven't gone right largely for the Cardinal over the past couple of years in particular. The biggest thing has been health. They have just been decimated by injuries. You go back to 2019 when they barely had enough healthy offensive linemen to field a unit sometimes. Stanford loves to, back when they're at the peak of their intellectual brutality powers, they'd run six, seven, sometimes eight different linemen at you, sometimes right. even on the same play. They couldn't even come close to doing that in 2019 because they didn't have they barely had six healthy offensive linemen throughout much of that season. Health and availability has been an issue again for Stanford this year, pretty much everywhere except the offensive line this year. The wide receiver room has been particularly racked. The secondary, inside linebackers are not healthy. The offensive line has stayed healthy, but they've been super ineffective. So health has been one thing. Tough schedule at the start. Even though Stanford went 3-2 in the beginning, that front-loaded schedule may have exacted a heavy price and may have exacted a heavy toll. But as far as this year is concerned, it's been injuries. It's been an inability to run block with any degree of consistency. It's been a complete and total inability to tackle, especially over the last few weeks. And against Washington and Washington State, all Stanford needed to do was just get one first down to seal both of those wins. They couldn't do it. It's a lot of things that have conspired against Stanford, particularly in the 2019 and the 2021 seasons.
Yeah, and I mean, this is year 11 now for David Shaw out there, and it's going to be his second losing season in 3 years. And you just detailed a lot of stuff that covers that stretch. How secure is David Shaw out there right now?
As secure as he wants to be. It's really not even worth going beyond it, but beyond that, he's as secure as he wants to be.
Well, and Stanford was historically a tough place to win consistently prior to Jim sure. Harbaugh showing up, and then obviously Shaw taking over after Harbaugh left for the NFL and obviously ultimately for Michigan, but he left for the 49ers when he left there. But Shaw led him to 5 double-digit win seasons in 6 years, and I mean, he was a hot commodity. If you gave him truth serum, would he, would he say that he maybe regrets not moving on for greener pastures, or is he completely happy, do you think, out there still at Stanford right now?
No, I think the fact that he's a Stanford alum, right? Class of 94,
sure.
Played in the program, knows. Had obviously the early 90s weren't completely take for Stanford, although he was on the field and was part of the program that went to Notre Dame and came away with big wins in South Bend in both 1990 and 1992. So, he goes back a long ways with this program, and he knows, it means something to him, and he knows that Stanford is it's not like just about any other place in the country where the football coach can pretty much run the campus, right? Which is pretty much the case in a lot of other places around the country. That's not so. He can't, call the admissions office and say, "Hey, slide this kid through, no matter what." It just doesn't work that way. So he knows full well coming in how things work at Stanford because he's been a part of that process himself. So, I don't think that he regrets it. I mean, certainly it's been super challenging. 2020 with the health directives that Santa Clara County issued here that forced the Cardinal to play their final four games on the road. They went 4-2, by the way, and won three and won all four of those games on the road, by the way. I think somehow people seem to forget that. But I don't think he regrets making that move, to any extent, to any serious extent, really.
As you kind of referenced there a second ago, they built that program there at Stanford on physicality. It was a different blueprint than most of the mm-hmm. conference was playing with. And you talk about the offensive linemen and 13 personnel and all that, that different stuff, basically on mm-hmm. bullying teams out there in the Pac-12. If health isn't a factor, is the blueprint still in place? Can they kind of get around the corner again and get it going close to what they were a few years ago?
Well, based on what this year's offensive line has shown, I don't necessarily think so, but that's not necessarily a bad thing because Stanford has a young quarterback in Tanner McKee, finally took the starting reins in week two, and at times, you know, especially earlier in the season, you could have made the case that he was the best quarterback in the Pac-12. Super poised, makes good decisions, a bit long and lanky, so he kind of has an elongated throwing motion, but it works. He gets the ball where it needs to be when it needs to get there. So he's got a quarterback, and he's got wide receivers, lots of them, when they're all healthy, which has not been the case at all at any point during the course of this season. So, you know, I mean, I've often said this, you know, David Shaw would prefer to win a street fight over a track meet. But he also wouldn't mind having the ability to choose. And this year's team, the way it has performed, is more built to win a track meet than it is to win a street fight. Now, at times we have seen phone booth football where they trot out the extra linemen and things like that. But that's not what Stanford has done best this year. And based on what the strengths of the offense are and where they could likely lie in the next couple of years, with McKee, with much of that wide receiver room coming back again next year, I don't necessarily think that that's where the strength is going to lie next year. That being said, they haven't been able to run the ball with any consistency when they've needed to. We mentioned Washington and Washington State when they had chances to just get one first down, and they couldn't do it. Stanford's better at throwing the football, but they need to get better at running the ball as well if they want to get back to the levels that they've been experiencing for much of the past decade plus.
Talking Stanford football with Troy Clarity, and I mean, they beat Oregon earlier this year. How did they, for all their issues, how did they beat Oregon? How did they win that game?
I was asking myself that very question walking out of the stadium that afternoon, and I'm still asking that question. And here, look, again, as we talked about earlier in this chat, right? So many things have to fall into place for you to just win a football game. And the biggest domino that had to fall was Oregon being up by a touchdown inside 3 minutes to go, and they threw the football on second down through an incomplete pass. Stopped the clock. Stanford eventually got a stop, and that eventually gave them the ball back, got pushed back to their own 4-yard line, had to overcome, you know, a big pass play. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau gets called for targeting and booted from the drive. That was the only time that his name was ever called throughout the course of that game, by the way. And then going back in time the game and winning it in overtime. Now, that was a different Oregon team that day in that their normal offensive coordinator, who just called a lights-out game against Ohio State a few weeks before, was in the Bay Area, but he was in the hospital that day undergoing emergency surgery. He wasn't feeling that great, so he wasn't with the team. And certainly, I think that affected some things that you saw from Oregon that day. But that being said, Stanford with a big goal line stop, keeping the Oregon Ducks out of it on fourth and goal in the second quarter, that proved huge. And Stanford at that time had the receivers to get the job done. John Humphreys with big catches. Even though Bryson Tremaine got lost during the course of that game with just a gruesome injury. The Stanford offense hasn't been the same since then, by the way. Elijah Higgins with big catches down the stretch as well. So, you know, Stanford able to get things going in the passing game and able to get just enough defense to beat an Oregon squad that looked very different that day than it really has, except for last week at Utah, at any other point in the season. Again, so many things have to fall into place for you to win a football game on this level, and that day those things fell in Stanford's favor.
That was their last win. They've lost six straight since then.
Yep.
Is there anything, you know, where Stanford is right now going into this game this week that, you know, both sides of the ball, either side of the ball, anything that they really can hang their hat on right now?
Well, the fact that they have gotten a bit better in running the ball, which seems a little silly because they're still by far the worst team as far as rushing yardage per game in the Pac-12. But things have progressed a little bit in that area as the season has gone along. And look, you know, that game after Oregon, the very next week, they had to go on a short week on a Friday, get on a plane, and play Arizona State. You showed me the schedule back in the spring and asked me to pick one game that Stanford was least likely to win. It would have been that one. On a short week, after playing Oregon, which is a super physical team, and having to get on a plane and head down to Arizona State, I didn't like Stanford's chances going into that one. And sure enough, they lost, and they haven't found their way back in the win column since. But, you know, I think there's that. They've gotten a bit better in the run game since then. Obviously, with Tanner McKee back after missing the Utah and the Oregon games, that certainly gives Stanford any sort of dimension as far as the passing attack is concerned. But and I hate to use this, but it's true, number one, and B, any port in the storm, I guess. Stanford hasn't mailed it in. They haven't quit. Look, okay. I mean, it's easy to roll over when you're down by 30, or when you're walking into the locker room and you're down 38-0 at the half, as they were against Utah. Stanford hasn't quit at any point this season. They've still been able to compete, and you can tell, you know, you watch enough football, you can tell when a team has rolled over and when they've stopped competing. That has not been the case for Stanford, even when scores have gotten out of hand of late, and that's been, you know, it's been a thing with them. Talking with Thomas Booker, their fantastic defensive end, you know, he says, "Hey, no checkouts," and that's been perhaps the biggest thing. And I hate to say this, but it's true. I'd love to say, "Hey, man, they've been doing fantastic things. Their red zone is awesome." I can't necessarily say those things, but I can say they're not going to quit. They're not going to punk out, and they're going to keep fighting no matter what the scoreboard says. So there is that.
Yeah, they just played their biggest rival, Cal, last week. Of course, they lost that game. Where does Notre Dame fit in Stanford's rivalry pecking order, I guess?
Boy, that's a good question. And maybe it slipped a little bit in the last couple of years because, look, this is the first time Stanford and Notre Dame have played each other since 2019.
Yeah.
So I think that answer depends a little bit on which generation of Stanford fan you're talking to. The older Stanford fans who remember when Big Game was completely sold out every single year, no matter the venue, the ones who remember 1982, the ones who were there for 1990 when Stanford scored 9 points in the final 12 seconds to beat the Bears, they will tell you hands down that Cal is Stanford's biggest rival. The younger fans, I suspect, will say that USC is Stanford's biggest rival. And maybe put Oregon in second place, because Stanford and Oregon, more often than not, have been battling each other for the Pac-12 North, and those games have often had a big hand in deciding who wins the Pac-12 North one way or the other. Notre Dame's up there in that top three or four, and I think it looks that way no matter which way you want to go. And there is a trophy attached to this, right? The Legends Trophy. So there is that. So, yeah, I think Notre Dame ranks up there among Stanford's rivals, certainly in the top four, no matter which generation you want to talk about. Who's number one? Depends on who you're asking.
Troy Clarity from the TreeCast podcast, also play-by-play announcer for the Pac-12. Troy, I hope your smoked turkey comes out well. If it's anything as close to the kind of information that you gave, I'm sure it's going to be delicious. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane, and let's do this again soon.
All right. Sounds good. You as well. Troy Clarity from the TreeCast podcast and Pac-12 play-by-play announcer as well, covering the Stanford Cardinal. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, my five question of the day, five thoughts going into Thanksgiving. I've got that coming up next when Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
This is the My Five Question of the Day.
Can you dig it?
On Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Today's My Five Question of the Day. It's just five thoughts going into Thanksgiving. Not necessarily a question. But here we go. I'm going to start with number five. Thanksgiving is the second best sports viewing holiday of the year. Not day, holiday. Second best sports viewing holiday of the year. New Year's Day is at the top of the list. The luster's diminished a little bit on New Year's Day, a little bit in recent years, you know, because they've moved, you know, the bowl games around, and it used to be all the big bowl games were obviously on New Year's Day. And it's like you could just flip around and you've got three games going on at one time, and Well, that's not necessarily the thing anymore because they've moved them around. They've staggered them. Thanksgiving in the NFL right behind New Year's. I've heard a lot of takes this week about Christmas Day and the NBA being better. Not even close. Thanksgiving, number two sports viewing holiday of the year. Now, that said, it's time to put us out of our misery. This is number four. Time to put us out of our misery. Get the Lions off our Thanksgiving Day viewing menu because they're just miserable. They've been to the playoffs just three times in the last 21 years. They've won one playoff game in like 60-plus years. I get it, Thanksgiving tradition and all that. The NFL knows they can put any garbage team on Thanksgiving Day or people are going to watch it. They know they're going to get 25 million people watching. I feel sorry for you Lions fans. I really do. But that doesn't mean I want to revel in, you know, like be in there in your misery with you and watch any of this. So I'd like to get past the Lions on Thanksgiving Day if I could. Number three. With all these London games, we need to start seeing one either on Thanksgiving morning or the day after Thanksgiving. At least, you know, if there's one on Thanksgiving, it can start at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Everyone rolls out of bed. There's a game on. Watching the Lions doesn't sting as much, right? They could also air four games on Thanksgiving Day. London's calling, and it wants Thanksgiving. All right, number two, as you may know, I'm a Cowboys fan. And I'm also kind of over the Cowboys being a part of everyone's Thanksgiving Day entertainment. You know, sure, growing up, it was always kind of cool to have my team on to watch, cheer for on Thanksgiving. They're 31-20-1, one tie all time on Thanksgiving Day. That is 52 Thanksgiving Day games, if you're counting. And there have been some classics, like Jason Garrett leading the comeback against the Packers in 94. The disastrous Leon Lett snow game against the Dolphins the year before that. I don't need to see them ruining my Thanksgiving anymore. To me, it feels like they've lost more than they've won. I don't feel good about this game tomorrow. I don't need my Thanksgiving wrecked for the sake of everyone else's entertainment. So there you go. So we can move both the Lions and the Cowboys off Thanksgiving. Number one, I just realized all my Thanksgiving thoughts are all about football. So I'll end these hot takes with this. Ham is better than turkey. Even on Thanksgiving, even if you're going to have turkey, cranberry sauce is a must. And so, you know, and so is stuffing. And I'm more a sides guy than turkey anyway. Sweet potatoes are better than regular potatoes. I said it. I'm not sorry. Ham is better than turkey. If you're going to have turkey, you've got to have cranberry sauce. Stuffing is still at the top of the list. Sweet potatoes are better than regular potatoes. There it is. I'm done. Happy Thanksgiving. That's the end of the My Five Question of the Day.
You're listening to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat with Sean Stiers on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
I'm just going to hang around for a little bit. Vince D'Addario, Jim Irizarry.
All right, fine.
Hell, you know, Vince was shooting me texts.
I want to know what these texts were about now.
So, where is it? So I was talking at the end of the first segment, or, you know, back in the first hour,
okay,
about, you know, this whole desire for people that people have to win exhibition games rather than play in the college football playoffs. And mm-hmm. Vince texts me, I'm moved. And then I said something. I kind of, you know, told him he could shove it on the air at the end of the segment.
Okay.
And then he gave me a ha ha ha. Then he said, it was a passionate plea. I loved it. You're right. So the question is, were you just patronizing me with that, or did you actually love it, Vince?
No, listen, it was the Teddy Roosevelt quote is what got me. I'm a student of history.
And,
just because you're a history buff, yes.
You know, when you started, when you went down that road and you started giving me Teddy Roosevelt quotes and, you know, I mean, I was, if I was on the fence, I was not on the fence anymore after that. But
okay.
Look, you make a really good point. You make a really good point. When you start comparing it to basketball and the NCAA tournament and all this other stuff, you are 100% correct because, you know, there's quotes. There's a million quotes out there, right? You miss all the shots you don't take, all of those things, right? Like, you're 100% right. If you're not in the fight to begin with, you can't win. So I would much rather be in the fight and have an opportunity than – you know, go to a quote-unquote New Year's Six Bowl, because look, here's my problem with the New Year's Six Bowls. They don't matter anymore.
Right.
Okay? They don't matter in any way. They don't matter.
No, I mean, since the invention of the playoff, they're completely irrelevant now. They're just show up, cash your check, you know, you get to be on national TV playing a quote-unquote higher profile game or whatever, but
yeah,
you know, especially like, you know, like Notre Dame has already won 10 games now. So like, even from that aspect, you know, it's not like, you know, like a few years back when they beat LSU and it became, you know, their 10th win of the season. You know, it's like, okay, well, at least from that aspect, you could say, well, it got them their 10th win, and now you're on a streak of five straight double-digit win seasons. So, like, even from that minor aspect, it doesn't even matter anymore.
No. You know, no, it doesn't matter in any way. And it's like – and it's a shame, too, because the Bowls used to mean something back in the day. I mean, that was – so much fun to sit and watch the Bulls and going, you know, seeing the Big Ten champ with the roses in their mouth because they were going to the Rose Bowl. Like, that all used to matter. Now, it's usually the second place team that's going to end up going to the Rose Bowl, and you may not even be facing a Pac-12 team anymore. Like, it just, the Bulls just don't mean it. Everybody's like, oh, they win a high profile. They're not. The only high profile Bulls are the Final Four. That's it. That there are no more. And that's. It's a shame. I don't like it. I think they need to do something to bring something back to those bowls, and I guess expanding the playoff does that, but at the same time, going to a New Year's Six Bowl outside, because I'm not cashing a check, so it doesn't do anything for me, but I understand that it's a big deal to cash a check, but it's not a big deal to win it anymore. It's just not.
So you would rather have a national championship trophy instead of a giant bowl of oranges sitting in your trophy case?
Unless the national championship is at the Orange Bowl and I get both, then no, it does not do anything for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense to me.
Because they're fake plastic oranges anyway, right? So
yeah.
Well, the ones
if they're real, I mean if they're real, the ones oranges, that they they're
get
just
originally, the ones they get originally are real, and the only reason I know that is because a buddy of mine did an internship down with the Orange Bowl like 10 years ago, and his job was to go get the oranges on the day of the game to put into the trophy.
At least they smelled good, I'm sure.
Yeah, so there you go. But I'm sure, like the one sitting in you know, the monogram room and all the you know, up at Notre Dame, I'm sure that those are not real because they would have spoiled a long time ago.
Okay, so he had to go get the oranges. Was it like the scene where Harry's trying to deliver the dogs to the dog show in Dumb and Dumber? You know, like he's just having to speed through traffic and he gets there and they're all, you know, completely disheveled and destroyed and whatnot? Or
well, I don't know what the outcome was.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure he made it and everything was okay.
No, okay.
But they were real at least on the day of.
I mean, that could have added to the lore of the Orange Bowl even.
Yeah, absolutely. they should, you know, put a GoPro on them, you know, and just that would have been one of those deals, you know, when they go and eat at the restaurant or whatever. This is how they get the oranges. Yeah.
All right. Your Thanksgiving takes, by the way, Sean. Ham better than turkey.
I mean, I don't think I'm alone on this. It's funny because I was going to bring this up, and then I saw Keith Kinder, the Mishawaka football coach, and one of the other football coaches tweeting about this. If turkey was better, this is the tweet that I saw. If turkey was better, we would eat it more than one day a year, right?
Facts.
Yeah.
Facts.
Okay. All right. Look, we'd at least cook it more often, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you go to the deli and maybe you have a turkey sandwich, you know. But to me, it's like I said, you know, I know that, you know, it's a hot take. You know, not everybody is in on the cranberry sauce like me, but to me, it's like you got to dress that turkey up to make it taste like anything worth eating. So,
yeah, I am following the example by your guest and throwing our turkey breast into a smoker this year.
Now that that is the way to go. I really like the smoke, especially if you do the smoked turkey right. Sometimes, you know, some people can over smoke it and it ends up even drier. But
yeah,
Vince,
where
do you stand on the turkey argument?
On the turkey versus ham argument?
Yes.
Or just turkey in general? Turkey versus ham is easy.
Well, turkey in general.
Turkey versus ham is easy. It's ham all day. In the D'Addario household, we do turkey on Thanksgiving. We do ham on Christmas. You know, I much prefer the ham so many ways, because I dig the leftovers, making the ham sandwiches and all that different stuff. The turkey is a very fine line with the moistness of the turkey. If it's cooked properly, it's good. But it's so easy to make it too dry and all that. So that's why I also prefer the darker meat, because it's more moist. I
think that's where the flavor is.
Flavor to it.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Here's
my dad has a new, you know, my dad has been a widow for a long time, as you know, Vince, but he has a new lady friend within the last year or so. And it's one of these, you know, he knew her in high school and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But, you know, so he's going over to her family's for Thanksgiving tomorrow. So, for our listeners who don't know, I'm in Daytona Beach, Florida with the Notre Dame women's basketball team. Yeah, I know, right? Sitting right by the beach. It's a rough life, I know, but somebody's got to do it. But
true.
So the rest of my family, my wife and kids, are back in Kansas with her family, but they went and had dinner with my dad and his lady friend last night, and so Thanksgiving came up, and my wife told the new lady friend, well, you know, Jim doesn't like turkey. Well, apparently this never came up, because we always have to, that's kind of where the ham, you know, we do both, basically, and it's to appease my dad, because he's never liked turkey. You know, so we've always done a ham and a turkey on Thanksgiving.
Mm.
And so he never brought up the fact with her that he doesn't like turkey. He's, you know, for us, it's like, oh, we've got to go out of our way to make my dad the ham. But now that he's got this new lady friend, he wasn't going to tell her that he didn't like turkey. So
you know how it goes early in relationships. You don't want to really rock the boat. You know, you're
going to
eat something you may not like.
You've got to disclose that information, though.
He's playing the game, Jim.
You know,
he's playing the game. Okay,
he's playing it big time. He's playing it big time.
But I mean, I guess he is making the sacrifice, and I guess that does go a long way with a relationship. But
now, Jim,
I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
As far as, you know, sacrificing ham on Thanksgiving, though, you know, if that's your preference, I mean, that's big of your dad. I'll say that.
That is a big ask. You sound like you are more you're more turkey than ham. Is that kind of where you are?
I'm kind of more traditional that way, yes, and also the fact that I have figured out how to make a turkey, how to make it, you know, where it's not where it's not, you know, dry as the Sahara.
Things are good
as far as cooking in my house goes.
I don't know how you do your, but this is what I discovered a few, and I think I picked this up watching like the Food Network is. What I found out, the key to making sure you don't have a dry bird is you've got to stuff it, like, with, we put, like, some squash, some apples, a little bit of cinnamon, you know, those kind of things,
okay.
And you stuff that, you know, like, into the turkey, and so that it create, and then, you know, like, you do the bag, and then it creates natural moisture, and it comes out really juicy. It is delicious. We've been doing that for, like, maybe 5 years, one of those Food Network things that we picked up. And that actually, you get a really good bird. You get a really juicy, moist bird that way.
So really, that's attributed to Bailey. That's all her on that.
That's right. Watches the food. My daughter Bailey, because she's the Food Network fanatic.
Right.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Okay.
If it wasn't for her, I never would have picked up that tip.
See?
All right. Yeah. The way I did it last year, I just covered the entire thing with butter. Like, it looked like a turkey that was basically carved out of butter.
That's something you can't go wrong with more butter.
Mwah. I'm just going to – I'm like, oh, mwah. Mwah. I am making the chef's kiss multiple times. I'm not going to lie. I think I cooked up the best turkey that I've ever eaten last year. So.
Well, a chef's kiss off the glass, my friend.
That's right. That's right. With some onions.
That's good to me. All right. Well, all this talk is making me hungry, and we are doing, you know, like I said, I'm down here with women's basketball, and they're doing their Thanksgiving dinner tonight because they didn't want to do it tomorrow and bog them down since they play on Friday. So
makes sense.
I've got to head down and get my turkey. And right. I don't know if there'll be ham there, but I'll take whatever I'm given.
You need in this to let case us know also, if they have both.
Beggars can't be choosers. I will take what I am given. You know,
that's
there's
a good
there's
point.
Only so many lines I'm willing to draw. So,
okay,
that's absolutely great. Free meal in front of you, you take what's put in front of you. I believe me.
That's exactly right. And I guess maybe that's kind of where my dad was coming from. You know,
not looking a gift horse in the mouth, that sort of thing. Okay,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right.
I expect a picture of your plate then. Send me a picture of your plate. I want to know how the women's basketball team is making it happen on Thanksgiving.
You know, my family told me they wanted pictures as well. It's like if I pull out the camera and I start taking pictures of my food, does that look a little odd?
In today's culture? No.
Yeah. No. Yeah, okay. That's a good point, Jim. That's
not
a really
at
good
all.
Point. And be like, you can blame
that's
us.
True.
Be like, hey, they wanted to see, blame
that's
us.
That's true because
put it
they're
online.
All, they're all like they're college players. They're probably going to be TikTok in their dinner for that matter. So.
Bingo.
Right.
Exactly.
There's going to be a 3-minute bit about their meal.
That's right. Who knew? All right. Well, you guys enjoy the rest of the show. It was fun doing this. I wasn't, expecting Thanksgiving hot takes tonight, but I had a good time doing it.
All right.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean,
that's awesome.
Know,
have fun.
That's what we're here for today. Have a great call this weekend.
All right. I appreciate it. Vince, you and your family have a good Thanksgiving. Jim, you and yours have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Sounds
like you're going to have a delicious turkey. Let's talk about this on Friday on Leprechaun Lunch at noon. What do you say?
That sounds good.
Well played.
All right. We'll see how the Thanksgiving hot takes rolled.
Yeah.
At noon on Leprechaun Lunch.
And also how the hot rolls took. So.
Yeah. There you
baby.
Go.
So. Yeah. Mm. All right. Sounds good. Talk to you later, guys.
All right. So there's Sean. Off to Thanksgiving dinner already. The lucky so-and-so. So, anyway.
Turkey dinner on the beach. That's basically what's occurring.
I mean that's not a bad way to go. I have never
had Thanksgiving not like either at my house or a relative that is close by. Like never, on vacation or on the road or anything like that. It's always been traditional. And in the relative's house have never been far away, like a half hour, I mean? Like we've never been a family that travels over the holidays, so I can't even imagine what it would be like to spend like Christmas or Thanksgiving or something like that, like in a hotel on the road. It's just different.
Yeah, I did it once in high school.
Okay.
Growing up, my high school was in the Macy's Parade, and I was in the band.
Oh, nice.
Because look at me. And so we were in the band, and, obviously we're in New York, and, really the only Thanksgiving away from home, even, that I've ever really done. And, they rolled out the carpet for us, quite honestly. I guess we had gotten dinner at the 5-star restaurant Sardi's.
Okay.
Thanksgiving in a 5-star restaurant. I'm doing okay. I'm not gonna lie. I was doing okay with Thanksgiving dinner that night. So, you know, things were all right. But that's the one time that I've ever spent Thanksgiving away from home. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, that's worth it though.
There's a high bar. That was worth it. There's a high bar set.
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's see. About a half hour left. We've got the Neil Ivey show coming up at 7 o'clock here on WSBT. Dan Patrick, Above the Noise, right now. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT. Jim Irizarry and Vince D'Addario taking the rest of the show. Taking the rest of the show home for Sean today, who is off getting an early Thanksgiving dinner. So we're here cleaning up the mess.
Just the rich get richer, Jim. That's really what it is. The rich get richer.
We asked him, of course, you know, to post a food pic of dinner, or at least to send you a food pic anyway.
Yes, I want to see it.
If that food pic has like this scenic back view, you know, this scenic backdrop off of a balcony or something.
That would be insult to injury. And yeah. If I were him, that's exactly what I would do too.
That's totally what I would do. In fact, I would be searching for balconies that, you know, like they're not even at my hotel. You know, like I'm trying to get up onto the roof of the hotel and just having this, you know, this shot of dinner, and you know this. I would assume beautiful sunset in Florida. So
well, see, and that's the thing though. It's 6:30, and it's probably past sunset.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, but the point would still be there. I mean, you could probably still see palm trees and you know the whole thing.
You know,
so.
It's Daytona Beach. You know, they've got electricity. There's lights.
I'll be sure to send him a picture of my plate tomorrow with the backdrop of my backyard that I spent raking all afternoon.
Yay!
That's how I spend my days off, Jim.
So that's what you're doing for Thanksgiving? You're raking? I did it today. Oh, okay.
I did it today. All right. Yeah, I did it today. So it's a nice, it's a clean pallet out there in the backyard.
Okay. Does your family do like a game of football or something like that, or because you have enough players?
We do, but I mean we have enough like souls, you know, like humans, but like not enough people that would actually play.
Oh, okay.
It would be me versus my son. Like that would basically be who would play. So no, we don't. We're just a sit around, watch football, you know, talk kind of a family, I suppose. Yeah. That's our Thanksgiving. You know, the parade is big in our house. The kids love the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and everybody's excited that that's back this year in full force. And I'm excited about it too. I mean, it's a tradition. It was even when I was a little kid, obviously. So, so that's what we'll do. We'll all get up, we'll watch the parade, have a nice breakfast, and then start prepping, baby, because we're the hostesses with the mostesses. Everybody comes over to our place.
Nice.
So, yeah, we acquired home field advantage at about kid 3. So now that we're at kid 5, we have hunkered down. Everybody has to come to us.
You're not only hosting, you not only have home field, but you're hosting the world championship game every year.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So. Absolutely. We have home field advantage forever. So, yeah.
Sean brought this up during his My 5.
Okay.
And he had a couple of interesting takes. Get the Lions off of Thanksgiving.
Oof.
And then I couldn't believe my ears when I heard this. Get the Cowboys off of Thanksgiving.
Really?
Yeah.
He said that.
Wow. And his reasoning was he feels like they've been losing more often. You know, like they're 31-20-1 or something. You know, that's a record on Thanksgiving, so it's not, you know, the greatest, but it's still a winning record on Thanksgiving, you know.
But what is it the last 10 years?
I think that's where he's like, get them off. You know, the last 10 years.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. And then he also brought up, you know, the Leon Lett game.
That was on Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. That snow game against Miami, that was a Thanksgiving game. And I remember just howling with delight, you know, me being a Giants fan and all, you know, at Leon Lett just fumbling the ball closer to the end zone for Miami.
Yeah.
But, and then also, you know, I mean, you know, there's also the Randy Moss game where America was basically introduced to Randy Moss on a grand level. You know, that infamous game. I mean, it's probably his best game as a pro even. So, you know, but I couldn't believe my ears when I heard that. So he didn't follow this up with what type of game he would replace it with. You know, would he find two new teams?
I think that would be the logical thing, right? Is to just, you know, find a good matchup. I mean, you can look, I don't think everybody has necessarily panned out the way they might have thought, but at the same time, you can at least look far enough, you know, down the line to figure out, okay, what a good matchup might be, because that's usually what the Sunday night game is usually just a random good matchup.
And that's what they've added with the night game on Thanksgiving too. It's just random teams. You know, there's no set one team doing it. So, you know, would that be the better way to go as far as Thanksgiving goes? Just have three random, as opposed to being, you know, watching the Lions, you know, try for a half and then going to dinner.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and then the Cowboys, you know, depending on what type of year the Cowboys are having, watch the Cowboys try for the second half after you wake up from your post-dinner nap. You know, I was just floored that he said, you know, take the Cowboys off, quite honestly. That was the most jarring part. So
maybe it makes his Thanksgiving just too stressful. You know, maybe he's just too stressed out watching the Cowboys do their thing on Thanksgiving, and he can't just relax be with his family. You know, I could get on board with that. I would understand that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it this weekend, or this year, I should say, because it's the Lions versus the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And my in-laws, they're all Michigan people, right?
Okay.
So they're Lions fans.
Sure.
And I'm a Bears fan. So we actually have none of us are living in a world where we think either team is good.
Right, okay? Right.
But it's more along the lines of, hey, at least we've got some skin in the game and we can have some fun with it while everybody's over. You know what I mean?
You've got some family bragging rights in this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just a random, you know, game that's on. And it's not just the Lions are losing again and to you know, team A, whatever, right? At least if the Lions are losing, that means the Bears are winning. So,
true.
You know, that's always a bonus. So,
are you waiting for after the game to eat, or are you doing it at halftime?
Well, usually, because the TV is very visible in the eating area.
Okay.
One of the eating areas.
You know, with five kids, smart. Two.
Yeah, right.
Not gonna lie, smart.
And so I'm gonna make sure that I'm sitting at the table where the TV can be seen, unless it happens to be halftime. But everybody usually comes over around 1 o'clock. Turkey's out around 1:30, and then it's all hands on deck. So that'll be, I guess, halftime would be around 2 o'clock, maybe, or 1:30, right?
1:30, so,
because it's a 12:30 game.
Yeah.
So,
1:30, 2 o'clock in that rare.
Yeah.
In that range.
So, we'll probably start around halftime, accidentally.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Something that you're not getting for Thanksgiving, though, is a new head coach. The Athletic reported earlier today that apparently Bears team chairman George McCaskey addressed the players today and told them that Coach Matt Nagy would not be fired after Thursday's game in Detroit.
So a reputable source is actually reporting this.
Right,
because the source that reported that he was going to get fired was someplace, some website I've never heard of.
Patch.com.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one before.
Right.
Is it even a sports website?
I don't know. I didn't even go and check it out, quite honestly. I've never been to Patch.com even. But
I'm going now. They're going to get one bit of traffic.
One little ding, one little ping right
one
here.
One little ding, and I can't even tell what it is, to be honest with you. It's it's like a random news site.
Huh.
So
almost like a blog.
Yeah, the banner picture is grass.
What?
So Not sure what that's about. What? But then you scroll down and it's just a bunch of news stories. So from all over the country. I don't know. Never heard of it before. But I've heard of The Athletic, and they generally get things correct. So I'm going to go ahead and believe them.
Yeah. Yeah, they were the first to report that that McCaskey's meeting took place today. So there's that. I guess, you know, Matt Nagy had to sit through that awkward press conference yesterday.
Jeez.
Oh. Oh. Like somebody had to do something to address that. Somebody in the Bears front office had to address that, because that was just such a comedy of errors to have to put the guy, you know, to put the guy through that.
The fact that the whole front office was unavailable for comment was not a good look for Chicago, because in this day and age, you can text, you can call, like email.
Yeah.
Like, there's a million ways to comment.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were all unavailable for comment did not exactly throw their faith behind the head coach.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I don't know if they had to huddle up and discuss it first or what. They had to wait a whole day to come out and say something. But man, that was not a good look. The Bears just don't handle things very well, and this is just a prime example.
Hmm. Yeah. That was the worst part, I thought, was just the front office just saying, no comment.
Yeah, right.
So,
Yeah.
And then also in the NFC North, Aaron Rodgers joking today during his weekly appearance on the Pat McAfee show about COVID toe. Has a fractured pinky toe, actually, and actually even put his foot up, you know, in front of the camera on Wednesday to say, hey, look, my toe is fractured. Apparently suffered it during workouts at home while preparing to return to the Packers for their November 14th game against the Seahawks. So, what do you think he did to break that toe at home?
Well,
wait, is that a baby on the field?
Defensive. Could have tripped, I suppose. He could have dropped a weight on it. I can think of a lot of ridiculous things that he could have been doing while, you know, spinning more lies, could have tripped or something, you know, something along those lines. There's a joke in here someplace, and it's just not being written in my head right now.
Foot and mouth. But, go that route. Foot and mouth.
There you go. Ooh.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
That's solid right there.
Yeah.
Really solid.
Something having to do with foot and mouth. Probably trying to, you know, put his foot in his mouth again, you know.
Yeah.
There we go. There's
pulling his foot out of his mouth. He broke his pinky toe. There you go. I like that. That was well done.
All right. I can do things on the radio. Hooray.
I'm impressed.
Let's take a break and then wrap up the show. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio, 960 AM WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Of course, presented by the fine folks at Budweiser, the king of beers, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Football fans, this Bud's for you. Also by South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. Wings Etc., Grill and Pub with 14 Michiana area locations. Stop in today or order online at togo.wingsetc.com. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Legacy Heating and Air, your heating and clean air specialists. Find them online at legacyheatingandairinc.com. Tim Growl, State Farm Insurance. You need life insurance today. Tomorrow will be too late. Protect your family by calling Tim at 232-9981. Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, serving our community while serving Michiana's most favorite pizza since 1978. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. The Mishawaka Education Foundation. Fisher's Barbecue and Catering, open Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon, and Saturday at 11 until sold out. Midland Engineering Company, completing their first century of quality roofing experience. And by Mimo's Pizza on Edison and Mishawaka, the best pizza in the state. Manja Mancha. So, there's all the business. I gotta commend you, sir, on being Vince Stradamus.
nailing
the college football playoff rankings, at least the top four, and I believe the top six too, right?
Seven. I got it all the way down to seven.
You got it all the way. Okay, you hit all seven.
I got it all the way to seven, and then, you know, you get to 8, 9, 10, and you're basically looking at the rest of the Big 12 who has any kind of opportunity, and then Ole Miss. So I actually think the committee got it right for the first time, you know, in a while. I think they had Alabama too high to begin with. But, you know, as of right now, okay, fine. They're three. And Ohio State has proven that they are playing better football than Alabama, so they should have been number two, and they actually ranked them number two, which goes a long way, in my opinion, to what the committee is going to do to Alabama if they lose to Georgia. You know, look, they can't look past Auburn in the Iron Bowl. I get that. But, you know, Auburn doesn't have their starting quarterback. I just don't see Auburn upsetting Alabama. So you're looking at a one-loss Alabama team playing a zero-loss Georgia team in the SEC championship. If Georgia wins that game, it's going to be very tough sitting in the three hole right now, in the three spot, to maintain a top four ranking with two losses. With Alabama dropping to three, I find that to be very, very difficult. If they were still at two, I think there's a really solid argument for maybe they drop to four if it's a really close loss.
Yeah.
But to only drop one spot after losing, I just don't see it. So I think that's very telling by the committee. And then they did the right thing. Ohio State's playing better than Alabama. And frankly, you could make the case that Ohio State overall is playing better than any team in the country, but they still have a loss, so Georgia will maintain that number one spot. But if we're just talking about right now, man, Ohio State is clicking on an awful lot of cylinders.
Right, right. Do you have any picks for Ohio State and Michigan?
Well, I actually I'm working on my picks right now IrishBreakdown.com, and I just polished up my Ohio State Michigan preview.
Ooh, is this an exclusive?
It might be.
Is this a first right now?
It might be.
Yes.
I'm
breaking news.
Yeah, it is breaking news. Look, Ohio State's favored by 8.5, as you well know, since you are the spread man.
Yep.
I would be shocked if it's that close. Look, this is the best Michigan team in a while. They're playing good football overall. They should not have given up a 14-point lead, I think is what it was, to Michigan State. They're probably kicking themselves for that, just like Notre Dame fans are kicking themselves for how they played against Cincinnati. But they still, like I said, Ohio State is playing unbelievable football right now. And I just don't see and it's at Michigan, so Michigan's got that going for them, right? But I've got Ohio State winning by 15 in my prediction.
Okay.
So if I was a betting man, which at times I am, I would take Ohio State and I'll lay those points.
All right. Yeah, I made a big deal about, you know, how Ohio State was like a 20-point favorite over Michigan State and how Vegas was disrespecting the Spartans, and then they went out and annihilated them.
Yeah. I took Michigan plus the 20. I mean, Michigan State plus the 20, and
that didn't
was
work
over
either. Yeah.
Pretty darn fast.
Yeah, it sure was. Anyway.
Yes, it was. It was ugly.
Parlay just, you know, went up like a clay pigeon and just,
man.
So enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, you do the same, Jim. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Tell the wife I said hey, and I'm sure you and I will be talking very, very soon.
Absolutely. For Vince and Sean, Jim Irizarry, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT South Bend.